You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
And welcome to this week's edition of The Mountain Gardener. This is your host, Ken Lane. We're here every week talking about the landscapes of northern Arizona. And we're now in that wintry stage where it's frosty, it's chilly in the evening, it's warm during the day, but you're not going to have the top down on that convertible. You're probably not biking as much as you were, except the hardcore folks. This is more of the wintry time. This is when you bake the cookies and sip the tea and watch things happen outside. The clouds are darker. The days are shorter. And your plants feel that. Some of them do. Some of them put themselves to bed. The leaves dropped off. They said, I'm not doing this. I'm shedding all my leaves, turn their bright color, shed them, and rake them up. I've raked up most of the leaves in the yard. The willows are still dropping a few. The Bradford pears are still dropping a few. So there's some foliage left, but we're coming down to the end of it. In 2 weeks, we got our winter solstice. That's around Christmas time. I think it's the 21st. That's the shortest day of the year. About 2 weeks after the shortest day, you get your coldest night. That's usually first part of January or so. And then the days get longer and it starts to warm back up. And so that's kind of the cycles that we have. Some plants love that. I mean, they live. They shine for this. I was just helping a customer with some Abelia. Beautiful evergreen shrub, just pretty. It has this, it was a variegated variety. So normally they're green. For those of you in that Northwest, you're used to Abelia, just out there growing in hedgerows. Here, they're grown more of as a specimen. Evergreen, dainty little leaf, pretty flower. They're not in bloom now. Normally they're green foliage, and then they'll turn this bronzy color, has this wintry bronze edge to it. Well, this variegated yellow variety turn this brighter red, so it looks very pretty. Nandinas will do the same thing, or heavenly bamboo. You folks from the California area, you know your heavenly bamboo. There's a lot of varieties. We're starting to specialize in the varieties that turn more winter colors. So you get your Moyer's Red, your Siena Sunrise, your Gulf Streams. These are preferred varieties for the mountains because they're lower maintenance. They stay smaller. They're easier to maintain, and their winter, fall, and winter colors are so intense. They're just gorgeous. Now, they're evergreen. There'll be green foliage during the growing season, but as we get the days get shorter, the leaves that are there will turn this bronzy, red, orangey colors. There's different colors to them. So it's triggered by some chill, so the frost, and then mainly by the shortened days. So you'll see this. And then as the days get longer, starting in end of middle of February through March, it just greens right back up, starts to flush its new growth, goes into berry or into flower, and then just shows off again. Those are tremendous mountain plants. I mean, they just work really well. If you've got that container out by the front yard, it's just the things you had in it, you planted some annuals. Annuals, remember, live just 1 year, and then the winter kills them off. If it's sitting there bare and you need some excitement, something that looks good, something that dresses it up, you've got guests coming and you want to show off your front entrance, like, welcome, I'm glad you're, welcome to the party, yay! You want that to be dressed up. We've got some plants that are evergreeny that look good. There's some plants that look better in the winter than they do in the summer or in the spring. So you just need that seasonality. You're up here, this higher elevation, where you need a four-season kind of landscape. You always want some spring bloomers, the lilacs and forsythias. So about 20% of your landscape should be dedicated to spring-blooming plants. 20% should be dedicated to summer-blooming plants. That's salvias and butterfly bush. Crepe myrtles are famous up here. You want 20% of your landscape dedicated to fall color. So you want to see those maple reds, the aspen golds. You want to see that transition, that change in your landscape. And then you want those leaves to drop, and then that's when your winter evergreens show off. You want about 20% of your winter evergreens dedicated to the landscape, dedicated to evergreen plants, whether it's a tree like a pine tree or fir or Colorado spruce, or whether it's a shrub like your photinias and cotoneasters and junipers or the abelia that I just mentioned. Those are all things that keep that seasonal interest always going. And you've got to have that balance right, or certain times of the year, your landscape can look awkward, look bare, look like it wasn't designed well enough. And so that's the secret. 20% spring, 20% summer, 20% fall, 20% evergreen. That last 20%, whatever tickles your fancy. Well, if you're here, if this is your summer home, I would load up with summer blooming plants, because you don't care about winter evergreens. You're going back to your desert home in the winter. So yeah, you're not here to enjoy it or not enjoy it. Just put it on those areas that you're enjoying that landscape the most. If you've got an absolutely stunning view out the back patio, I would load up with more interesting plants around the patio where you entertain. And when you're outside entertaining, that'd be, when can we go outdoors again? The last frost, at least here in the Prescott area, is about Mother's Day. So about from May on through October, we're outdoors. We're using that patio. We're watching sunsets, sipping wine or tea, and just enjoying that outdoors, watching the hummingbirds come back and forth. I would take that last 20% and load it up on that, just so it's for your pleasure, your enjoyment. But you need 20-20-20-20, and the last 20%, which makes the whole landscape, it should be whatever tickles your fancy. And that's a good way to design. I always start with the trees. Trees have got to be placed correctly, because trees are where either accent or frame a beautiful vista, or they can block off an ugly neighbor, a rude neighbor. I want to be private. I want my secret garden here. So you use those trees and you start with that, because they're the ones that take the longest to fill in and get up to size. So that's when you want to spend your most money on. You cut back on the flowers. You cut back on the shrubs, because they grow so fast. I mean, red-tip photinia, why buy a bigger one? Within 2 years, they're all going to be the same size. But a beautiful maple, a new Colorado spruce or Alberta spruce or a new whatever it is, a bigger tree, a screening plant, Arizona cypress, those take some time. And you want to place them correctly so they fill in and plump up and take over and fill in like you envisioned them. They're going to cut that wind. They're going to cut down the sun baking the west side of your house. That's where you really want to place those correctly and put your energy and money into those. That's also where you can get caught, where I want to spend $10 less, but now the tree has a crook neck or dog leg or it's got a scar on the side, or it wasn't grafted correctly, or the shape, it just hasn't been grown up and trimmed and nurtured to grow in a certain way. A really good tree will be held by that farmer an extra year so he can nip and tuck and shape so the branch structure comes out and the trunk will be a little larger. And that will correct any dog legs, that kind of stuff. So that's where you really want to spend a little more money on those trees, because once an ugly tree is ugly, I mean, it never changes. It stays that way. It just gets bigger and more ugly. Is that uglier? Anyway, so that's kind of my advice. I do want to go into actually how to plant. How do you plant a vine? Let's say a honeysuckles. I just loaded up a whole cartload of honeysuckles going out of here. It's an evergreen vine that just really looks good. That's the one as a kid, you took the stamens out and sucked the nectar out. The hummingbirds love the taste of honeysuckle. They're not blooming now, but they've got green foliage with a bronze tinge. Well, how do you plant that? Whether it's December or March or July or any time of the year, I'm going to go deep into that. I see I've got Lisa coming in here in just a moment. So she's waiting in the wings. We'll answer some garden questions. The bottom segment's just not long enough. I'll do the last half of the show. I'll dedicate just how to plant. Here's my technique. Whether it's a fruit tree, an evergreen shrub, a new perennial, we'll go deep into what are the exact parts and how much and how do you do it? How do you stake them? Because in the wind, some of you poor folks out in those valley areas, once the trees lose their leaves, you're exposed to even more wind. Oh my goodness. So how do you plant that so you can maximize that growth? That's what I want to go deep into on this show. A lot of tips, tricks, and garden advice waiting for you. So don't change that dial. I'll be right back with Lisa Waterslang in the studio.
You're listening to local garden expert Ken Lane, also known as the Mountain Gardener. Ken can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center in Prescott. Listen each week as he answers timely garden questions unique to mountain landscapes.
The holidays are here in the Christmas City, bringing family and friends together and those chilly winter winds. While you're decorating the outside, don't forget to brighten your inside with exotic holiday plants from Waters. Beautiful poinsettias and Christmas cactus are coming to town, grown exclusively for Waters in colors you won't find anywhere else. Unique, vibrant, and guaranteed to warm up even the dreariest of winter days. Check your list twice for all the holiday plants only found at Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Hi, Lisa here with the plants of the week and our Sunshine Daydream Abelia.
Pink and white flowers continually cover this brightly yellow shrub. Very pretty.
Requires less maintenance than all the other cultivars with a compact, creamy foliage.
At $34, it's a garden designer's dream bloomer that takes heat, wind, and blooms even longer with a bit of midday shade.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott. For people who love easy perennials, love to shop.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
And we are back with Lisa Waters Lane in the studio. She comes each week with your garden questions. Just what are your neighbors talking about? So each week we just answer those and hopefully it'll get you on track to things. So sometimes you don't even know what questions to ask. So you just listen in.
You don't know you're on the wrong track until you see the train coming at
you. The worst thing is to be in the wrong place and you don't even know it.
That is bad. True.
So anyway, welcome, Lisa. Merry Christmas, by the way.
Yeah. You got all your shopping done?
I do.
Really?
Wrapped? I can't wait to give you your gift. I can't wait. It's going to be so good.
I feel the same way. And
really?
You don't even know what it is this year.
You might
you
be surprised.
You can't even guess. What? Did you open the box?
No. Oh. No. It's pretty big, though. I like the size.
It is big.
Yeah.
Bigger than a bread box?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I hope you like it. We'll
it's
see.
It's flat, too. It's a roadkill. Roadkill jerky.
How'd you know? No. You always guess.
The grandkids. I got a few things for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a dinosaur book for the one that can read, a dinosaur claw for the one that can't. So that ought to do some damage to their infant sister.
Poor child.
That's going to be hilarious.
Yeah. But it'll be fun. We always look forward to Christmas. And this year we'll get our grandkids and our daughter-in-law will be here. And
very nice.
That'll be nice.
So what kind of garden questions do we have? What's going on there?
Well, we do have a couple of Christmas-type questions. So Marta wants to know, how often should she be watering her poinsettia?
Yeah.
And how long should she expect it to last?
Well, it can last forever. Unfortunately, it can last forever. Will it ever be colored again? Can she get it red? So eventually those red leaves are going to drop off and new green leaves are going to come back on. Then it's difficult to get a poinsettia green again. So you want to put it in a back room where the lights aren't coming on and off. It's unaltered evening light, night, dark. Mm-hmm. That's the secret to getting a poinsettia to come back into color. That's hard to do in a house that you're actually living in where people are coming and going and guests are there. And it just doesn't work that way. So usually that's a seasonal plant. You're enjoying it for, you know, through Valentine's or so. And finally it starts to look thin.
Ugly.
Mangy, ratty. And then it's meant to go in the trash. It's actually meant to be in the dumpster. This is hard for you gardeners. You can't throw anything alive away. Sometimes they're meant to be thrown away. They're just kind of...
You know how I handle that?
You just put it outside the front door for a moment while no one's looking, and it freezes like that.
Takes care of it.
I know when you're done with Christmas.
You don't feel guilty
at all. Poinsettias are outside on the front patio.
But they're beautiful, and I love them, but you know, I'm enjoying them for the month and a half, 2 months up to Christmas, so it's just kind of... After Christmas, I'm ready for some fresh new house plants.
Well, eventually, that's part of it. You just get tired of the season. You're going, Christmas is great. But, you know, after the fourth Christmas party and bowl of eggnog, you kind of go, I'm ready for bring on
for spring. Bring
yeah,
me spring.
Ready for spring, really. So you answer the watering question. You were just watering all the poinsettias out in the yard or in the yard, in the houseplant room.
Yeah.
How often are you watering those?
It's been about once a week, depending upon the size a little bit. And the other great tip, if you're watering poinsettias, is water with tepid or warm water. They like that much better than that cold water.
Yeah, they're a tropical plant, so they want to be treated like, if you're comfortable wading into your bathtub, so will a tropical plant, right. So will a poinsettia. If you got to tiptoe in, you wish you had a wetsuit on before you get in the water, well, those plants are going to think the same thing. And so, they're wimpy. Yeah, they'll warm up. Come on, man up. No, they don't like to. They don't like cold. I think once they get chilled, it's hard for them to recover. Mm-hmm. So tepid water is great. Yeah. Same for your Christmas tree. If you're in the water basin for that cut tree, they prefer warm water. Same with I would say the cut wreath, the fresh wreath, the boughs. Spritz them with room temperature or warmer water. They'll absorb more moisture into the needles by giving warm water over cold water.
True. Another good tip with your poinsettia, a lot of them come wrapped in the foil, so they look really pretty. But that foil is not always waterproof. So set a saucer under it, take it to the sink and water it. Don't leave it on your fine antique grandma's buffet, because you might get a watermark.
Be foiled by the foil. I was waiting like 60 seconds to say that.
I knew you had something in your head. Your eyes were lighting up. I'm like, the wheel.
That's where we really should beam this in so we can have live cast the show. But yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. We'll move on to our next question. Barbara wants to know when she should start thinking about amending her vegetable garden area. And what do you recommend using for those amendments?
Sure. So that's great. So it's time. So the summer garden's been gone for over a month, month and a half. So it's been open. I've cleared all of ours out, all that dead stuff. It's been added to the compost pile, or it's been thrown away, depending if it was diseased or whatever. But it's gone. So it's open. I don't want to do it yet just because I'm enjoying the fresh new soil. But if you're ready to go, you can do it right now. The goal is to amend your soil so it has time to set before you plant in it. So when you add manure, you add composted mulch, you add your fertilizer, your gypsum, your calcium, you're adding some soil sulfur, you're adding your nutrients in there, you're turning that all into one shovel's depth, or you're rototilling it, then you want it to set for at least a month, at least. So it has time to neutralize, especially if you're really loading up on the manures. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a neighbor with a huge pile of horse manure, great stuff. But you don't want to just add that to your soil and then start planting in it, or you can burn the roots, or there's some stuff in there, some nematodes and grubs and stuff. You want to make sure you monitor that. Mm-hmm. You do want to add it also so it has time to be cold. You want to amend it so it's chilled, so it has time to neutralize it, and it kills off some of that things that might be in. This is broadcasting all over northern Arizona. Everyone's listening from all over the place. I don't know what they're adding into their soil, but anything organic is good. But you want to give it time to see what it's going to do before you amend, then plug your plants. Mm-hmm. Planting season here in the Central Highlands typically starts the end of February, first part of March. That's when you put in your kale and broccoli and lettuce. That's when you put in your flowering pansies and snapdragons and ornamental kales and dusty millers. So about a month before that. So any time between now and the end of January is a good time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what the book says is a 2-inch layer, 2 to 3-inch layer of organic material tilled down to one shovel's depth. Mm-hmm. So you add that manure, that composted mulch. We've got a really good deodorized manure here. You're not afraid. You don't feel gross after you get done handling it. It actually looks like a compost, but it's rich. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You add that on. I would sprinkle the fertilizer, the all-purpose plant food. I would put some gypsum down or calcium nitrate down over top of that. I would add soil sulfur, those three things, plus the mulch. I turn it all under at the same time, and now you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. Let it set for about a month. And by the time planting season starts, whenever that thaw happens at the end of February, typically after Valentine's, it starts to get warm again. Yes, we can still get cold. Yes, there's frost, but it starts to warm up. You can start planting all that stuff. That's okay. That's kind of the 1, 2, 3s of how to get your soil ready. Mm-hmm. Time.
And it's not, if we get moisture, rain, snow, it's not going to end up washing that out of the soil.
No, not if you're using organic. Those mm-hmm. are all organics. If you're coming to mm-hmm. us, it'll be organics. Mm-hmm. They won't break down that quick. Mm-hmm. The synthetics, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Well, our last question is from Gary. He's being driven absolutely insanely nuts by the little gnats flying around while he works on his computer.
Yeah.
Wants to know how to take care of them.
It's fungus gnats. In fact, I'm writing a press release now because it's becoming such a problem, trying to get the word out. So he's just the leading indicator. It'll only get worse from here. Mm-hmm. A little tiny gnat, they live in your houseplants or that poinsettia you brought home or the Christmas cactus, or they're in the houseplants. We've got a product here called Systemic Granules. It's a 1 pound jar. You sprinkle it on, looks like fertilizer. You water it in, takes care of the maggot that's living in the soil. Once that happens, all those adults flying around bugging you at the computer, they'll be gone. Because mm-hmm. they only live about 3 days. They only come up to do one thing. One thing only.
Let me guess.
Yeah. To lay more eggs, to mate and have more eggs and mm-hmm. to perpetuate the whole issue. Sure. So the systemic kind of makes it happen. We do have an organic spray called Triple Action. You can spritz the plant to get rid of the adults. Mm-hmm. That's a quick fix that you'll see instant results. But the long-term fix, you've got to get rid of those worms in the soil, right, or they'll just keep coming back at you. And that's Systemic Granules.
Yep.
There you go. Fungus gnats here are such a problem this time of year. Be right back with Ken and Lisa Lane and the Mountain Gardeners.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona, with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Hi, Lisa here with the plants of the week and our Arizona Gold Euonymus.
An excellent choice for colored hedges and as tough as they come.
This evergreen displays bold gold, head-high foliage that grows even thicker when sheared.
A single shrub makes a bold statement for just $27. But in rows, they make excellent visual and sound barriers.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott, where people who love bold gold hedges, they love to shop.
Hi, Ken here with the plants of the week and our red clusterberry, Cotone Aster.
Stunning white flowers cover the shrub in spring, then form red berries.
A large evergreen that is tough, easy to grow, and tolerates poor soil.
So thick when sheared, it's the perfect privacy for hot tubs, secluded entertainment areas, and prying eyes for just $39.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott, where people who love red-berried Cotone Aster, they love to shop.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
This has been a difficult week. A dear, dear friend passed away this week. Ken Byers, good friend. I mean, he is my mentor when it comes to radio. He ran basically the radio group, KPVV, KQ&A, K-Cattle. I mean, just a bunch of radio groups. He's the guy. But he helped me figure out how to put this show together many, many years ago. We go way back. Chamber of Commerce buddies. Oh, just heartfelt. His memorial was on Friday. You are missed, my friend. And to your wife, Shannon, we are here for you. I pray for you daily. I mean, wow. It's hard to see a friend go. But Ken Byers, man, you are the man. I will not forget you. You are here in my heart. And thank you for making me a better radio guy, a better community guy, and helping our family out over the years. Thank you very much, my friend Shannon. Thinking of you. Anyway, on to bigger, happier things. That's why we garden, isn't it? We garden because it's a therapy thing for me. When I get stressed out, this week I've been doing marketing. 2019 marketing plan. I'm already putting together magazine ads, magazine articles for February and March of next year. So that's the deadlines for magazines. High gloss, high definition stuff. It's months in advance. You've got to get these things done. So it's difficult. I've had my whole team here. We're trying to figure out, you know, what's going to happen. the orders for next spring. I had to figure out logistics of how much, when do we land? A huge order of material came in this week. 7 pallets of fertilizers and bug killers and weed things. And so it's happening. Those aren't the things that I like, though. I do that because I have a passion for gardening, and the family passed this garden center on to us. So this is our 58th year of doing a garden center. But that's not the things that I care about. I mean, I like it, my attorney. I like my accountant, but I don't like dealing with accounting and legal stuff. I prefer gardening. When I get really stressed out, I'll go out to the garden center. I'll just go chat gardening with customers. It's therapeutic for me. I like talking about gardening. I like getting my hands dirty. It's decompressing. I lose time when I garden. I just lose track of, I try not to take my cell phone out with me, so it's going off all the time, so my attorney can get to me. So it's just, I want some time together. So right now it's lots of poinsettias. We've got some pretty holiday peppers, these beautiful pepper plants that are just decorative. Not really grown for edible. I mean, I'm sure you could eat them, but they're just pretty. Amaryllis, I'm noticing out here in the nursery, they're about to blossom. I mean, timing's perfect. This huge 2-foot-tall bulb, this bulb that's the size of your fist, we plant that, and it grows up, has a stunning 2 to 4 to 8 flowers that are the size of your hand coming off of this thing. They're Christmas amaryllis. They're just starting to open. That's like magic. That gets my heart going pitter-patter, going, wow, Christmas cactus. The buds are just starting to crack. They're at the perfect moment. I get excited about seeing the holiday plants. And I'm not gardening as much outside. I mean, I'm cleaning up. I'm dressing things up. I'm starting to bring home the broken bags of composted mulch and manures. And I'm laying that over top of my vegetable and flower gardens. So I'm going to turn those in later. I'm not actually out there physically doing it yet. But inside, there's a lot of things we can do inside and some outside stuff. But the gardening piece, that's why it helps us reconnect with the earth. It helps us reconnect with each other. I think my grandkids came over for Thanksgiving. They're going, Papa, your yard just looks, you're an amazing gardener. And so this is coming from a 7-year-old because I trained his dad. His dad loves to garden, and they've got a nice yard, and they do garden stuff. It looks very nice, but he's only been working on his yard for 3-4 years, new house. I've been working on mine for 15-20 years. It's just the maturity level is starting to happen more faster, so it looks fuller, nicer, filler. Plus, it's a bigger house, so it's not my first house. It's my 4th or 5th house, so it just has more to it. And so, but a nice one, your multi-generations, they see that. And then you can share that. My little 4-year-old grandson, he goes, Pops, can we go out and can we go pick stuff? I'm going, well, son, there's nothing to pick. It's like winter. They all bit the watermelon. I saw the watermelons out there. Can we go pick another one? I'm going, nope. So we went outside and we picked beets. So we pulled some beets out of the ground, and they were awestruck, going, whoa, that's so cool. It looked like a little lettuce thing, but look at the root. It's big. It helps us connect the generations. That's the beauty of gardening. So the passion is there. I think we can share. There's a lot to learn. We can pass down simply by gardening and watching hummingbirds and butterflies go. So that's what I love about gardening. I didn't even know why I got onto that track. Ken Byers, you're the man. You helped me with this show. That's why. Thank you for that. Be right back.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona, with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
These tulips are delicious.
We're the cutest mule deers, and we just ate Mrs. Smith's flowers.
We avoid Mrs. Johnson's because she has native plants from Waters Garden Center.
She's got bright red sage, sunny blanket flower, hot pink gara, and a lot more.
They grow like crazy in local soil, and she hardly ever has to water them.
Hummingbirds and bees love natives, but they taste awful to deer.
I sure hope Mrs. Smith doesn't figure that out.
Go native, Waters Garden Center.
The Grinch went to Waters and couldn't believe his eyes. There were cut trees in every shape and size. He could take one home and then toss it after the season. Good! And then he saw living Christmas trees that grow and grow. So it seemed a good reason. A beautiful living tree, and have Waters plant it because of his bad knees. Have the merriest of Christmas from all of us here at Waters Garden Center. And we have Lisa Waters Lane back in the studio. She comes, the segment's just all about my pretty wife.
It's all about me?
And her gardens.
Oh, okay.
And her knowledge and her cranial knowledge within that rich upbringing of garden. You were raised in the garden center. Mm-hmm. You just ooze.
Well, that just sounds gross.
I wondered when you jump in. Anyway, she is a pretty smart gardener, so I just wanted to. This segment's just set up for her to share a different perspective on gardening.
You bet.
Enlighten us.
Okay. Oh,
Merry Christmas. We had our first Christmas party.
Yeah.
Things are happening now. So three or four of them lined up. Well, I got another one I just booked too.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah. Not a big Christmas party fan.
There's one after Christmas, too. So
oh, my goodness.
The Lodge has got theirs. Scottish Rites has got theirs. Yeah. I think the 27th. They said, we're not even competing. We're going afterwards. We're just not going down the Girly Street Grill. And
pretty smart.
It's a good idea. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, it's always fun. But yeah, it can get overwhelming.
But yeah, it's just fun. Don't drink so much eggnog then.
I can't drink eggnog.
No. I'm intolerant. Eggnog intolerant.
You don't want me drinking that egg.
No,
I might ooze.
Okay, we went too far down that rabbit hole.
Okay, we'll bring it back.
Back to gardening. What do you got?
I thought, since we have so many people moving into the area, they're looking at landscaping their homes and doing different things, I thought I would hit on some of the mistakes that people make when planning their landscapes for their homes. So the first one is basically not having a plan.
Yeah, that's
number
true.
Number one.
Yeah.
You know, and you go into a garden center and you go, oh, I like that plant and I like that plant. And all of a sudden you end up with this hodgepodge of things that is not cohesive and it doesn't look good. And so having a plan, whether you actually go to a landscape architect, whether it's something maybe you put together yourself or you come into the garden center and do a consultation, there's a lot of different ways to pull it off depending upon your budget. But have a plan. Have a something laid out on paper so you're not just buying willy-nilly.
You know what I think part of that is? A lot of folks have, a lot of parts of the country have lawns, and then you can go to the garden center and just buy whatever, throw it in, and the cohesion is the lawn. No matter how hodgepodge this is, the lawn ties it all together. Well, here, we don't have that. We have rock lawns, basically, and rock doesn't do it. If you do it incorrectly, you don't have a plan. You need to be more designer-esque when you do that, because the lawn's not going to help you. That rock is not going to help you tie it all together. Now it looks hodgepodge and stands out.
Yeah.
Or it looks, you don't have enough. The proportions are off.
Yes.
So it looks, it feels funny. I can't put my finger on it, but it feels funny because they didn't have a plan. So
right.
True.
Definitely have a plan. Also, probably one of the first things you should really do, especially in our area, is pay attention to those erosion control areas, because you will want to take care of those first before you start planting. Because if your whole hillside is going to wash down in the first monsoon, you know, it doesn't matter what you plant because it's been destroyed. So pay attention to those areas that might, even though it's not raining now or when you originally put your landscape in, if you got a hillside or an area where a natural creek is coming through, you need to pay attention to that.
I just saw the latest forecast for this winter. They're saying it's a little warmer than normal and wet. So wetter than normal. So that means more rain. And the worst erosion comes in March. If there's a little bit of snow and it's starting to melt, and then we get a rainstorm that kind of helps it, you get kind of double down on that rain. It really erodes things down. So that's where you want that riprap or plantings in there to hold it together.
Right.
So important in mountains.
Definitely.
Mountain gardens.
Next one is, and I see this a lot and it drives me bonkers, neglecting the front yard. People, you know, focus a lot of energy on the backyard, their patios, their decks, and all that kind of stuff. And they forget they have this whole front yard that is your curb appeal. I mean, that adds to the value of your house, and it just makes your house more inviting, more neighborly. So don't forget to stop at the edge of the driveway and take a good look and go, maybe I do need some more stuff out here to make it more inviting. Containers, flowers, all those kind of things make a huge difference in how your home looks.
Your landscape should greet you every time you come home. It should just say, I'm so happy you're here. You might only spend 30 seconds driving down the driveway, hitting the button, mm-hmm. opening up the door, driving in, closing it, but it should greet you every time you come by, and your neighbors should delight that they're mm-hmm. going up and down going, oh, I like that. Look what they did there. Oh, what's that?
Yeah.
So it should be that. Tickle your fancy.
Community.
Yeah.
Community. The next thing, and this is a big one here, is not getting a good irrigation system going. Because you should probably think that one through before you start to plant. Because we're dry and we get hot. You've got to irrigate these new plants. And unless you've got all day long to run out there and just water, you know, drip irrigation can save you a lot of time.
Pays for itself within 18 months. There's more and more math. There are more studies on that, just in the reduction, healthier plants and reduction in water cost. Mm-hmm. So that's a win-win all the way around.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Next one, and this one's big too, is people don't think about their big trees that they want in your yard. And that actually should be the first thing you plant or you think about. Because once you plant those trees, you're not going to want to be moving them.
Yeah, that's true.
They're just too difficult to move. So it'd be very important to actually place them where you want them. Are you using them to shade a window, you know, during the summer? Are you using it to block a neighbor? Those are things that are really important to think about, those big trees that are going to take up some room. And while you're thinking about that, make sure you're not putting them too close to your house, so that you're always going to be have to trimming on them, cutting on them, so they're not hitting the house, scratching paint, windows, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think trees are the biggest blunder of all of them. Mm-hmm. You see, I can drive down a neighborhood and spot who's a novice, and who actually plan, because they're planning for mm-hmm. how it's going to be,
right.
Not instantly. I want instant shade right now, so it's 3 feet off from the house, yet this is going to be a 65-foot tree.
Right.
It's going to lift the foundation, lift your roof off mm-hmm. if you're not careful.
Right.
So that's one where it does pay to get some advice. You know, mm-hmm. have a consult. Okay, we have a consulting service.
Right.
They'll come out to your house. They'll walk the yard. It's very affordable. Mm-hmm. So you place them just right. Otherwise, you're going to spend that consulting fee plus several thousand dollars more for a guy to come in with a chainsaw and clean this thing up and constant maintenance. And it's just, you want to place the trees right.
Mm-hmm.
Shrubs, there's more fudge factor.
Right,
flowers,
right.
A lot of fudge factor. Trees, you need to get that one right.
Getting the right trees in the right space, but also the right trees for that
for
space.
The space. I agree.
You know, you don't need a big, huge monster willow tree if you've got a little tiny front yard. So knowing that ahead of time is huge. The other thing is paying attention to your climate zones. So a lot of people are moving from California, Midwest, completely surrounded with.
Right.
But we're so dry here that plants, the holly that you put out in your front yard in Ohio or Chicago, you can't do that here. So knowing the right plant for your area, and also knowing where's the sun hitting, where's the shade hitting, because those are important things. Plants want certain environments. You need to make sure you're helping them get that.
That's what a consultant does. That's what a designer does, is they just know because it's instinctively in them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also get a similar feel walking your neighborhood and see what's growing and where.
Oh, yeah.
If something's really pretty in your neighbor's front yard with the same kind of light and mm-hmm. exposure, it'll do the same in your yard in that kind of spot, in that mm-hmm. north facing or south, whatever.
Right.
So good advice.
So the last one I just want to hit on, because this is another situation that we have a lot of problems with, and that's not taking into account the wildlife you have around you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're up in Highland Pines, you're probably going to have deer and javelina and bunnies. And unless you've got a way to protect some of those things, a backyard fence, whatever, you're not going to want to just put them willy-nilly wherever, because you're going to constantly be fighting the wildlife on that.
So I just helped a friend do a big new planter he's got. He spent a lot of money getting this thing just right, really designed it. And he said, and I have deer and javelina roam through this bed every night. So I'm going, okay, totally changed
mm-hmm.
how I helped him design those plant mix.
Right.
So what kind of flowers? He had flowers, perennials, shrubs mainly.
Right.
So totally changed. And you need mm-hmm. to do that and account for that. Otherwise, you just spent $500 on bunny bait.
Bunny bait.
Okay, Lisa Waterslane in the studio with her garden advice. Be right back. You've tuned in to The Mountain Gardeners.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona with local garden expert and the mountain gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Wondering why my garden looks amazing? Well, that's personal. The Personal Garden Shopper service at Waters Garden Center, that is. Before talking with my personal shopper, I had no idea which plants would be best for me. But now my garden is bursting with flowers and buzzing with hummingbirds. Just go to watersgardencenter.com, click on Shop, and choose Personal Garden Shopper. A Waters Garden expert will pick the perfect plants for you, personally. The Personal Garden Shopper, only at Waters Garden Center in Prescott.
As promised, told you how to go deep into how to actually plant. Let's say you have that new living Christmas tree. You're going to use it inside, decorate it, then you're going to transition, take it outside, and plant it out in the yard so you can enjoy it for years to come. Here's how you do that. I want a new peach tree, a new apple tree out in the yard. I just want that, and I want it to plant it now so that it's got time to settle in, root out some, and bloom next spring. So I will have apples next spring. Here's how you do that. I want a new vine on that fence line because the chain link's driving me crazy, and now the trees drop their leaves. I just see nothing but raw chain link fence. Well, here's how you plant some blackberries or a Virginia creeper or honeysuckle on that, just to help soften that up so you create that secret garden. Here's the go-to. No matter what it is, a vine, a tree, a shrub, even a berry, a fruit tree, here's how you do it in the mountains of Arizona. So everyone wants to go down really deep. There is no soil. All of our soil that was in your subdivision, in your yard, has washed downstream. We get these heavy monsoonal rains where an inch of water drops in like 15 minutes, and it takes our soil and it washes downhill. So the creek beds have some nice silty soil, but if you're up on a hillside at all, you'll find your topsoil is very limited. So the plants, even native plants, do not go down. They go sideways. They creep just underneath the ground to pick up the moisture, to pick up the nutrients that are there, the little bit of topsoil that's there. If that's how the natives are growing, that's how your ornamental, the plants you're going to grow, you're going to plant in your yard, that's how they're going to grow as well. They don't send a taproot down. There's nothing down there for them. The water table is 150 feet down, so they're not going to get to the water table. There's no nutrients. There's just more rock, more boulders, more caliche, just hard pan. They're not going to go down. The biggest of trees go down maybe 18 to 24 inches. Then they hook and go sideways, and that taproot goes just underneath the surface in all directions for dozens and dozens of feet way out. And so that's, if you know that's how the plants are going to grow, let's encourage a planting hole and encourage that. So your planting hole is going to be three times the width of your planting bucket. So the bigger the plant, obviously the bigger the hole is going to be, because you need to put three times. Take the bucket you've got, whatever that grower's bucket, add two more on either side and make it round. That's what you're going to do. Saucer shaped, so you don't want the roots. You want them to be get encouraged to go sideways, so make it kind of a saucer, and then the same depth. Don't go any deeper. Maybe a little bit deeper if you get into a boulder or a rock pan, a rock shelf or something. Maybe a little bit. If we were to come out and plant a tree for you, we'd take the jackhammer and we would fracture that soil underneath it if we thought it wouldn't drain. So we'll take the sharpest bit, we'll just jackhammer that thing. We won't actually pull the soil out. We know that the roots are going to go sideways. We just want to encourage drainage. So that's our technique. That if you don't, obviously, most folks don't have a jackhammer in the garage. Well, there, you have a digging bar. You just kind of dig it and try to poke it or loosen up that soil underneath. And then you're planting on top of that. So all this gunk that you pulled out of the soil, rarely do any of you have actual soil. If you do, good for you. Most of us are not going to have that. You want to filter that soil out, screen it out, actually screed it. And so that's anything bigger than a golf ball, you actually want to get rid of. So rocks, debris, old roots, anything bigger that's not soil, that's bigger than a golf ball, get rid of it. So it does nothing but bake. It roasts those roots in the peak of summer. It creates a little micro oven thing. So you want smaller particles of soil that hold the moisture. That's going to be better for rooting those plants out. So screen that. Throw them away. Get them on the back of your property. Throw them in the dumpster, whatever. Get rid of that. Screet that out. Now, what's left over, you've got a pile of dirt there. So there you want to have some composted mulch with that soil. And it's about 25% mulch to 75% soil, or about one scoop of mulch for every three scoops of native earth coming out of there. You want to blend that all together. We're going to add some organic into that soil. That's what's going to attract more worms. That's what's going to bring in the beneficials, the mycorrhizals, the fungi that actually help a plant root. There's some symbiotic things that happen, and it's all based on organics. So the organic compost. Don't use manure. That's way too hot for a new plant. You want to use a very neutral, we call it premium mulch, screened down to 1/4 inch minus. It looks like a chocolate or mocha color. You want to add some of that. What it's going to do, for those of you that have clay soils, it's going to keep that clay from compacting right back down so the roots can get through the soil particles. If it's sand, like up around Granite Basin Lake, Granite Lake area, those areas, the real granity soil, the water just flushes right through there. And so you want to hold that moisture in around the roots. So it's like a sponge. And so it holds. So you want to add mulch to that, and you want to add that around that, so it keeps the moisture and the foods around that plant. I've cheated and gone up to about 50% mulch to my native soil. Above that, it gets too gooey, too wet. It's too much. There we've got topsoils or some other products. Most of you won't need that. Most of you, 25 to 50%, you know, 50-50 mulch to native earth is okay. Then the plants will root out. I'm going to use that, blend it all together, backfill around that root, then pack it down real tight, and then I'll water it in. What I'll also do is I'll fertilize, because there's no real nutrients in your soil, so I'll sprinkle on top of that planting hole some all-purpose plant food. It's organic 744 fertilizer that will slowly break down over a very long period of time and feed that plant, so it feeds the new root hairs coming out. That's really important to getting that plant established, especially if you're planting now in winter, early spring, before things have leafed out. The plants are very hungry. They use a lot of energy while they're flushing out that new growth. It's great to do that. Plant now so you're ready to go in spring. But when those first leaves of your forsythia come out in February, March, they're going to be hungry. Well, that food kind of encourages them to keep going. Then I'll water it all in after that's all done with a root and grow. There's a rooting hormone. We made a liquid rooting hormone that encourages, it kind of tickles the roots of the plant, so it wants to send off more root hairs. So I'll water it in with that. I might do that once a month until spring, till I see the first leaves come out. Or let's say you're using the same technique in summer. I'll water it maybe a couple times a month because it's actively growing more often with the root and grow. And once I see it stabilized, it's not going to go into transplant shock and go, oh, look, new leaves are coming out. New flower buds are happening. Then I'll cut that root and grow out of the mix. It's a concentrated liquid rooting solution that helps the plant to start forming new root hairs. That goes into another good question. How much do you beat up the roots when you pull out of the grower's pot? So this is the pot. Let's say it's a tree. It's been in this container for 5 years by itself. It's the only world it's ever known. You're going to pull it out of this pot and put it in the ground. Sometimes those roots are very fibrous. There's a lot of roots. Sometimes there's not many at all. Sometimes they're bound. They're called root bound. They're actually spinning round and round and round in the bucket. How should you treat those roots? First of all, never, ever, ever touch. Don't buy a root bound tree or shrub. Once they start growing in a circle, that's basically last year's inventory held over. And they couldn't sell it last year. They sold it this year, usually at a discount, and it's root bound. It's overgrown. Those plants never really recover. They keep, once they're trained to go in a circle, they keep doing that. You want a plant that has the root balls stay together, but they're not spinning around in circles. If you're doing that, I'll pull the bucket off. I'll either cut it off with a razor blade, or I'll prune it off, or I'll just pull it right out of the bucket. And I'll look at it. I might massage the very bottom of the roots. but that's about it. I don't do a lot of manhandling. If it's a really heavy, aggressive tree, let's say a cottonwood or a willow or a sycamore that's got really aggressive roots, there I might score the sides or root prune the side roots, but I leave most of that soil intact. I try to leave, this is major, this is like open heart surgery and brain surgery at the same time. When you take a bucket, take a plant out of its bucket and put it in the ground, it's transplant shock. It's serious. I try to be and nurture this thing along as best I can. So I don't do a lot of beating up with the roots. I just keep it intact, massage the bottom, plant it like that. And that's basically how you plant. So 3 times the width, same times the depth, 25% mulch, all-purpose plant food, and then root and grow. Those are the things you need. And we've got a handout here that shows you all the different parts and how much to do that. So that's how you plant a tree or shrub or vine in the mountains of Arizona.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona, with local garden expert and the mountain gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
Hi, Lisa here with the Plants of the Week and our Arizona Gold Euonymus.
An excellent choice for colored hedges and as tough as they come.
This evergreen displays bold gold, head-high foliage that grows even thicker when sheared.
A single shrub makes a bold statement for just $27. But in rows, they make excellent visual and sound barriers.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott, where people who love bold gold hedges, they love to shop.
Hi, Ken here with the Plants of the Week and our red clusterberry, Cotoneaster.
Stunning white flowers cover the shrub in spring, then form red berries.
A large evergreen that is tough, easy to grow, and tolerates poor soil.
So thick when sheared, it's the perfect privacy for hot tubs, secluded entertainment areas, and prying eyes for just $39.
Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott, where people who love red-berried Cotoneaster, they love to shop.
You're listening to The Mountain Gardener with local expert Ken Lane. Mountain gardening can be challenging, but with Ken's tips, tricks, and garden advice, you'll reap huge rewards. Now, welcome back to The Mountain Gardener.
It just occurred to me over the break that I mentioned staking. You need to stake trees. And I especially evergreens. So there's a lot of, this is the time when you're buying evergreen trees. Your best selection is now. It's a great time to plant them. It's also easy to forget to stake them. What happens is they're generally ball and burlapped. They're field grown. A larger, nicer, fuller evergreen is going to be field grown in a farm, in rows. They'll go through and root prune them periodically every few years. So the average evergreen tree here at the nursery is probably 8 to 10 years old. When we harvest those, we'll actually dig what we call a ball, a root ball, and we'll wrap it in burlap. Then we'll put it into a container. We'll root it out further from there. If you take that and just plant it in your yard, it's got kind of a round root ball. It's got some weight. You wouldn't think that it would fall over, but what happens? We'll get some snows here, and the surface of that evergreen spruce will load up with 50 pounds of snow, and it doesn't damage it. It's okay, it can handle that, but it's not quite rooted out fully. It's pushing some new root hairs, but all that weight, if it starts to shift and falls over, not bends over, the actual root ball and everything slides over, you'll break all those new root hairs off. Then you got to pull it back up, start over again, which is fine. It won't damage it, but you just lost several weeks of root growth that you really want before the heat of summer shows up. So stake your evergreens. You wouldn't think it because they're so weight heavy at the bottom, but it really plays out. I've had to help more folks over the years stake plants and get them to stay upright because of the snowstorms. You just don't know how much snow we're going to get each winter. But just a couple of stakes on either side, tie it once just to keep it upright. So no matter how much snow we get, it's not going to load up and fall over. It's easy to go back out and set it back up, but why do that to yourself? Also, if you're planting now, or if you've planted since August, September, since the summer through fall, It is critical to water those new trees. So a nice day, pick a couple times a month, a pretty day, which is going to be nice at all elevations. It's going to be some really nice, beautiful mountain days, which is why we live here. Take the water, take the hose or a bucket and just water it in. A hydrated plant is going to keep those root hairs going. It's going to help the new buds grow. So there's immature needles forming underneath those little buttons at the ends of those branches. It keeps those healthy, keeps them alive, keeps them vibrant. So you do want to water. You're going, but it's going to get cold tonight. I don't want my plant to get cold. It's got so much antifreeze loaded up in that tree, it doesn't feel the temperature as long as it's hydrated. As soon as it gets dry, that's when it's exposed to the cold. This is especially important for shrubs. Let's say you put a new cotoneaster hedgerow. You got your neighbors out there. You bought a new class A. Contractor brings all his debris and dumps it in the side of your yard so you can enjoy it, and he doesn't even care. You want to hide that. This is a great time to put a new hedgerow of euonymus or cotoneaster or red-tipped photinia, whatever it is. Get them to root out. And then next spring, usually February to March, they start to elongate. The bud swell happens. It's just you get more growth by putting it in before they wake up. You can do that. Do it. But your hedgerows, they're the ones that need watering. They go through more moisture because they've got more foliage, more evergreen leaves on there. And so if you let it go dry, it will burn. We call it winter burner or winter kill. The tops of those hedgerows will be brown out. They won't come back. It'll grow its way out of it, but it will be terribly ugly all through next spring. I mean, by next summer, it'll be recovered. It'll drive you crazy between now and then. I've got a handout here that shows you exactly how to plant, how to water. It's got a water guide. It's free. Ask for one. If you shop here at Waters, you get one anyway whenever you buy a tree or a shrub, but I'm kind of expressing that off of this. That's what I'm reading off of for this segment, how to plant a tree or a shrub. Throughout the week, Lisa and I camp out here at Waters Garden Center, and we love talking to friends. To my Jewish friends, may I just wish you a blessed Hanukkah. To my Christian friends, the merriest of Christmas, and to all others, the happiest of holidays.
The Mountain Gardener, your source for garden advice right for the higher elevation of Arizona, with local garden expert and the Mountain Gardener himself, Ken Lane. Listen in every week for Ken's tips, tricks, and techniques that are guaranteed to make a difference in your yard this season.
The holidays are here in the Christmas City, bringing family and friends together, and those chilly winter winds. While you're decorating the outside, don't forget to brighten your inside with exotic holiday plants from Waters. Beautiful poinsettias and Christmas cactus are coming to town, grown exclusively for Waters in colors you won't find anywhere else. Unique, vibrant, and guaranteed to warm up even the dreariest of winter days. Check your list twice for all the holiday plants only found at Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
Okay, maybe after decades of the same fruitcake exchange, it's time to start a new holiday tradition.
A living Christmas tree from Waters Garden Center can be decorated and enjoyed for a lifetime, not just a season.
When the holiday festivities end, gather family and friends and plant your tree together for years of enjoyment. Or Waters will plant it for you, guaranteed.
As your family tree grows, have a tree that grows with your family. From Waters Garden Center, 1815 Iron Springs Road in Prescott.
You've been listening to local garden expert Ken Lane, the owner of Waters Garden Center in Prescott. Join him each week as he answers timely garden questions unique to the area. He can be found throughout the week at Waters Garden Center, located in Prescott at 1815 Iron Springs Road. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Gardener.